Hello and welcome to the Everything With Valve podcast season 2, hosted by me, Valerie DePaul. It's been quite a while, more than a month, since I've taken a sort of mental health break and just a leave of absence during the summer. And I've been up to many, many things. I went to Belgium. I flew again for what felt like in forever. It had been a year and a half. And as some of you may know, I'm afraid of flying. So that was definitely an experience. It felt like it was doing something new all over again. And today's episode, I will be talking about the power of shame with Noor. Noor, it's amazing to have you remotely joining me. So nice of you to join.
Thank you so much for having me, Val. I was just listening to your intro. Sounds like you had a really amazing summer.
Yes, it was nice to somewhat go halfway home. I haven't been able to go to South Africa yet, but to go to Belgium was just a step in the direction. So I guess it's something. So I'm super grateful for that. But on to you. I think for the listeners, please give us a bit of an introduction to yourself, where you're from, anything you're willing to share with us.
Sure. So my name is Noor Pinna, but if you were to pronounce it, it's Noor Pinna, but I go by Noor. I'm a mental health therapist and a shame resilience / transformative mindset coach. And I'm a TEDx speaker. I have a book that's coming out soon. I can not allowed to give all the details yet because it's a hush-hush surprise kind of thing. But when it comes out, I'll definitely let you know, Val. I've done work internationally in Afghanistan. I have done a lot of work with men and women around shame and just mental health issues, ranging from like shame all the way to depression to mood disorders. I write a lot of poetry, which is one of my outlets. And I love hiking and I love cooking and I love connecting people. It's like one of my passions. And I just really love the opportunity that I've been given in terms of being able to help both women and men in navigating, you know, their journey in terms of what they would like to achieve. And the phrase I often like to give, or the image I like to give, is like rising like a phoenix from the ashes. It's like rebuilding a whole new life, you know, and I'm just so humbled and honored to be a part of that journey when people choose to call me and be part of that. So that's a little bit about me.
Great. Lots to unpack there. But I think the first thing, and it's the reason when we got in touch, we really dove deep, as it were, into the subject. And that was this concept or sort of idea of shame. And I think to just set it up for the first part of the podcast is to really identify and sort of define what that means. Could you define for you, what does shame mean? What does it entail? Everything that goes into it.
Yeah. So there's lots of research about what shame is. I define shame as something that is self-isolating. It lives in secrecy. It does not allow you to breathe. It is a self-made prison. You know, Brené Brown, she's pretty famous with the shame, you know, and vulnerability. And so she often talks about like this aspect of how shame corrodes our joy and our sense of self, right? And shame really labels who we are. It uses the statement, I am something. And it's very pervasive in the way that we talk to each other, the way we talk to ourselves, the way that we interact, the way it feels, the way it tastes. And it's, for me, shame, when I was growing up, it was a lot about multiple identities that I was having, being an immigrant, being a Muslim, you know, being a minority, a woman. All of these things sort of played a role in what shame is, and it's how society views you and how you interact with all these different layers of conversations that take place, and not just in your pool of people, but the outer layers as well. So shame is really, it's not just individual, but it plays a bigger role in our society than we often think. You know, it ranges from like body image all the way to like parenting and finances.
Yeah, and I think one thing is that was the next topic that we were going to discuss is this power of shame. And you touched upon it a little bit there. It's, you know, it causes you to, some people, for example, I think it is quite difficult in this day and age, right? We are so heavily connected, sometimes even to the extreme extent where we always know what's happening. We're always surrounded by maybe someone who we determine to be better looking, someone more successful, someone more ambitious. There's so many, much more than us, and it's always a comparison game. It's never like, oh great, my friend is having a successful career in this industry and I'm very happy in my industry. Absolutely. I don't hear a lot of that language. Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. It's it's always about competition, not community, right? And it's not about building each other up, because the insecurities, the imposter syndromes, the, you know, the little doubts, all those things kind of come into play. And society says, like, by this age, you should have these markers done and check, and we're not, and we're at that age and we don't have these boxes checked off, but our friends do, right? And we may have some level of joy, but then there's this envious or jealousy part that might come into play a little bit. And that shame, like, why am I not there? Like, what's wrong with me? You know, why can't I achieve this? And there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. You're definitely not broken. Everyone's path is completely different. It's, you know, and trajectory is different. But that comparison game and that blame game is so strong. Like, if you just go on Instagram and you look at like all the little pretty boxes, you don't really see what's actually going on behind the scenes. You just see all the pretty pictures and the lifestyles that people have, but you don't realize like how hard some of these individuals are really working, you know? And I'm talking about the day-to-day people that like have really built themselves up, you know, and have been really successful, that have come from resiliency and have done these things to be like, I get to now live this life because I have worked really hard, but we don't recognize that work. We just see, oh, look, she's, or he is, you know, doing X, Y, and Z. I wish I was able to do that. It looks so easy. Why can't I do that?
Exactly. Everyone just assumes it's easy, right? And I think that is a combination of both. We're now also in that prevalent society space where we want everything in the here and now. Like if you look at Amazon delivery, what is the quickest way I can get my goods delivered? Or what is the quickest way that I can get from A to B, or anything like that? And it's everything sort of is determined to have a quick fix. And I can almost assure you that anyone that you look online, the majority, when they are showing the roots of their success, it didn't come from waking up one day and being like, this is success. Yeah. They had to work hard, persevere, fail countless of times. That was too ugly to post here. To get to that one shining moment, which is all of what we're going through, right?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with what you just said. Like, you know, I'll just give an example of my own. Like, I ordered some hijab caps from Etsy, and it was like, oh, it's going to be shipped on October 1st. I was like, what, 3 weeks? You know, you're used to Amazon being like 2 days.
Yeah. Right?
And so, like, what happens is, like, instant gratification has taken over, and we don't know what delayed gratification is anymore, because the moment someone likes our post or makes a comment on our TikTok or our Instagram or Facebook or whatever social media, it's like we instantly get like a jolt of like dopamine, right? And we're like instantly happy, and we're like, oh my gosh, this is it. One more person liked my view. This makes me feel X, Y, and Z, right? So it's like, I'll be happy when X, Y, and Z is there. But when you get to the X, Y, and Z, you're not happy because you haven't really worked on the root of the issue. You're still working on the surface level. So some people, for instance, will be like, if I just lose 10 pounds, right, I'll be happier. My life will change. Okay, so you've lost the 10 pounds. And yes, now you fit into different clothes. Maybe you eat a little bit more healthier, but you're still not happy. What's the reason behind it? And we're not doing that inner work all the time to constantly look at, like, what is the thing that's going to cause me to be really happy? It's not about losing the weight. It's about something else. Like, does that make sense?
No, it really does, because I think, you know, everyone has this threshold or idea at certain points in their life, you know, if only I was here, I would be happy. If yeah. only I had this, I would be happy. It's, for example, when I was young and I used to listen to interviews with very wealthy people, and they would say, you know, my money doesn't make me happy. It actually does the reverse. I'm isolated, I'm lonely, no one really understands the situation I'm in. And I used yeah. to think, what? You have yeah. money, you have all this opportunity. And then I think when you get older and you listen to it more, it's like, I think it definitely gives you more opportunity. There is less worry than most yeah. people know of. But I don't think that it provides happiness. Happiness yeah. is, and happiness for everyone is sort of different, especially when you measure it at different scales. But I definitely think that to a degree, it's not something that once you arrive at a given situation, it's automatically given to you. Once you finish the Olympic race, you'll be happy. I think yeah. it's actually, in those instances, it's the opposite. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the documentary, The Weight of Gold.
No, I haven't.
It's essentially about the literal weight of winning a gold medal in the Olympics. So it's like Michael Phelps winning all of those gold medals. What did it actually take to get there? And what were the repercussions of being an Olympic champion, or other Olympians who had to work 3 jobs just to afford to go to the Olympics and mm-hmm. afford their training, and then coming back and then being, yeah, broke.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So I think that it was, you know, a lot of people went into it being like, if I got to this state, I would be so, so happy and everything like that. And especially if you look at this year's Olympics. So when he talks about it, he was like, when I finished the Olympics, I had worked my whole life for this. Then when I retired and walked away, I had to question, and I obviously don't remember verbatim, but it was essentially like, what is next? I had this goal for my whole life. And a lot of people do that. You know, you can look at gymnasts, especially if we look at this most relevant one, which is Simone Biles. You know, she was given a very harsh critique about not participating. I mean, she has seven Olympic medals, so I think that's a different situation. But of course, you know, this power of shame, of even the shame that she received, right? She didn't participate.
Yeah.
She had the twisties, and people mm-hmm. were like, but you chose to sacrifice everything. And it was, yeah, I did, but I didn't choose to not be able to tell up from down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, it's not just personal shame, it's collective shame, right? So with mental health, for instance, you know, in my culture, things are changing as things always do, like they evolve and they shift. But some of that taboo is still there, right? Like going to a therapist, getting the help. Like people would rather go and get, like, go to a doctor and get a prescription for their physical ailment. Like symptoms will come up as like psychosomatic, and they will deal with that instead of dealing with the internal issues that's going on, because the shame is, oh, you're talking about your issues that are very deep and personal and family related to someone who's outside and doesn't know the family and might be judging and don't quite always understand the confidentiality laws and the HIPAA laws, you know, that, like, as therapists, we don't go around talking about other people's lives and, like, sharing information and things like that, right? So it's sort of like, oh my gosh, you're seeing a therapist, like there's something wrong with you, and that conversation needs to be broken down because it isolates people, you know. So they're for not sure. able to talk about how they're actually feeling, because oftentimes when we're like, hey, how are you doing? And we generally want to know, people usually will be like, I'm fine, I'm good. And then they just kind of bypass that entire conversation. And no, like, let's have that conversation. How are you feeling? And let's let's have that nitty conversation other than I'm good, because that breaks the shame down, because again, it doesn't allow it to survive in secrecy. You're being vulnerable by saying, you know, like, I had a bad day. You don't have to go into details. We can talk about boundaries, but just to say, I've had a bad day, it's been a rough week. And then if someone wants to ask you, you've opened that door now. And that's really important, to be able to put yourself forward and have that conversation with someone.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, when even what you were talking about there, where it can be isolating at times and such, even look at, maybe it's not the best example, but Justin Bieber made that song Lonely. And I think, you know, when you tell someone, you know, I'm seeing a therapist, and they're like, but why? You seem so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, but I'm struggling. Maybe you have depression. Maybe you have bipolar disorder. Maybe you have anxiety, all of these things under the sun. And then someone says to you, you know, if you have anxiety, just don't worry about it. I think that was my favorite thing. Hearing from people, and I'd be like, you know, I'm really struggling right now. I suffer from anxiety disorder. And they'd be like, but don't worry. Don't think about it.
I know. That genius. Is my biggest pet peeve ever. I just made a TikTok video on like emotions, and like people just saying like, oh, you can turn your emotions on and off like very easily, right? I'm like, no, you can't. You can't turn your feelings on and off. Like it's like telling someone who's having anxiety to be calm. That doesn't help in that moment. Like, they know they need to be calm, and they're working on trying to be calm by telling them that, like, you're not helping the situation, you know? And it's like, we are messy human beings that live in gray areas, and people are like, we want to be in clear boxes. We want to know we want to live in absolutes, right? And life isn't like that. And so for us to be like, we need to gather our thoughts, be present with our thoughts, to provide that like shame resilience, that's important, you know, and we can kind of talk about what shame resilience is in a little bit, but it's being mindful with yourself and being one and befriending the emotions and who you are and allowing space and genuine empathy and compassion from one person to another person, and to be like, I may not understand what you are going through, but I'm willing to sit down and listen to you, and that's all I can do, and that's good enough, because sometimes we just need someone to listen to us. We don't need people to like solve our problems. We just need someone to be like, it's going to be okay. We know what you need. You know what you need to do. But I'm here as your sounding board, because inherently the wisdom lies within our bodies and our minds. And, you know, being with a therapist or being with a coach, it helps in that sense that it provides an alternative view. It checks our distortions. It allows us to really divulge into our inner selves and have that personal growth. Like, just because you're going to a therapist or you have a coach doesn't mean you necessarily have a problem. You're going because it's always a personal growth. There's a journey to be had, and there's no shame about that.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. And I also think, you know, it is difficult when you reach out to friends. I had another guest on, and they talked about the difference between a community where you're tolerated versus a community where you're supported, uplifted, encouraged, motivated, proud of. That's a very different world, right? When you come from friends who merely tolerate you versus friends who always push you for the best, are loyal to you, loyal enough to tell you you were wrong, loyal enough to tell you where you need to grow, loyal in areas where it makes it better. We're not guaranteed that when we work on ourselves, we'll come out better. That isn't guaranteed, of course. Oh, but you go in there with the hope that it is, right?
Yeah.
That is the risk you take.
Yeah. And that is like the disclaimer, right? I always say to people, like, there are days when you're going to hate me. when I give you, there's no fancy words of saying it, but I give people assignments, right? Like homework assignments, like journal prompts or listening to a podcast or whatever it is. I'm like, this may be good for you. I want you to do this, right? To kind of keep building upon the skills that we've talked about. And I'm going to, and I tell them, like, you will hate me. And that's okay, because part of that hate is that growth that's going to happen, because again, it's messy and it's dark and we have to face our shadow selves and we have to face the shame and the stories that we were told when we were little about who we were and how we have to change that narrative and the courage it's going to take to change that narrative. Coming here every time, you're taking that courage, you're taking that vulnerability step. The next step is the action that you take after the sessions are over. Like, it's great that you come to session, but what are you doing after the sessions are over? How are you applying the tools so that when we talk next time, you're like, I applied this, or this didn't work, or I tried this, and this experiment was like, you know, whatever you felt about the experiment, we get to discuss those things. And that's important.
Oh, for sure. And I think what is also great to hear about next is that you've had some now new situations come up for you as well. When we were discussing in our first call, you've, for example, worked in Afghanistan, but you currently work sort of in the Bayrevik community. And now, especially as you were saying, right, with Muslim men are now seeking you out for support, for assistance, help, or whatever it could be.
Mm-hmm. It's such a wonderful feeling, and it gives me so much joy. Like, I love my coaching and therapy clients of Muslim men because it gives me so much hope, in the sense that, like, they are, you know, and they're all young. They're young men. Comparatively to me, right? So and they are like, I want to do better than my generation before me. I want to break the shame stories. I want to break the, you know, generational trauma. I want to step away and create a new definition of what a man is, of what, you know, of who I can be in a world where both identities can coexist, in a world where I get to be me and still be faithful to my religion and my spiritual values, but I still have an aspect of who I am. And I get to change that narrative because I no longer want to hold on to these old beliefs. And not that these men are coming from like households that are like very archaic in their thinking, but they recognize the trauma that's in their lives, you know, whether it's minor details or whatever, everyone's level of trauma is different. So you can't compare the two. And that's also where shame comes in, right? Like, shame says, oh, like, well, their trauma is way bigger than mine. So it doesn't count for me. I don't have the right to talk about it. And that's not true at all. So we have to break that story and say, like, it doesn't matter what the other person went through.
And yes. One thing I just want to ask in that realm is that, because this has been on my own experience, right? So I can't speak for anyone else, but I want to just follow up with a pretty deep question. I also think that in the most recent couple of years, it's also not, to say it just outright, it also hasn't been super cool to be religious, right? Regardless of which faith you've come from. I know that in Sweden, it's a little bit different. For example, when I'm in meetings with team members and, you know, we're having a team bonding session and people are like, on a personal level, what do you value? And my first response is, I value God. I value the relationship I have with my religion. And it's very personal. It's unlike anyone else's relationship to their religion. But for me, it's something that I deeply, deeply value. And everyone in the video call gets very silent and is like, oh, the weather, it's great.
Yeah.
Next. And I don't get uncomfortable by it because I'm not ashamed to speak about it. But I do understand that for, especially in Sweden, because it is more sort of non-religious in those areas and people don't really speak about it. But for me, I just think that in the last couple of years, you've seen that people have have had tendencies to move very much away from religion. And now people are tending to move back towards religion, which I think is fantastic. There should be a blend and you should do what makes you happy. But I do think that it has been sort of, regardless of which religion, it has been typically not cool to be religious.
Absolutely. I agree. I think there's just been an ebb and a flow with religion. And you know, when I went to school, like, counselors don't, unless you went to school specifically for, like, you know, like of Christian faith, you know, to become a chaplain or something along those lines, that was okay, right? But, like, schools didn't really talk about, like, religion in counseling, you know? So, like, my religion is super important to me, but by no means do I impose that upon anybody or allow my values to transfer onto other people's, because one of ethics, one human being, and all of these other things that come into play when you are talking to a client, right? So even when I get a Muslim client, there's no two Muslims that are the same, right? And so everybody's values are so different. So my job is to just support whatever value you see that helps you. And, you know, and spiritual, like, I'm huge in spirituality. So, like, we often, I'm not shy in that. So I will always, like, be like, okay, is your religion or your spirituality really important? Because if it is, we'll tie it into our treatment plan. You know, and if it isn't, no big deal, you know? And so I do ask those questions, because there is research that says, like, when you have a spiritual spirituality, and again, spirituality does not have to be tied to a religious faith, but sometimes the two are, they say that people tend to recover faster, you know, the belief in something bigger is there. And so I have some Muslim clients that are, you know, ashamed of being Muslim because of what has happened in the US with 9/11. They, you know, they've chosen not to wear the hijab. They don't tell people at work that they're Muslim. They've gone out of their way to separate their identity in public because of these reasons, because of all the baggage that comes with it, you know? And I can understand that. And I have felt that. So I have a lot of empathy. And then it's like, how do I integrate my ancestral roots back again into who I am? How do I become proud of who I am? And how do I let people not take that away from me, but be proud of the person that I am, because it is a part of me if I choose to include it. Right? It's all about choice.
Absolutely.
It's not compulsion in religion, you know, or in spirituality. So it is an interesting trend. And, you know, going back to both the Muslim population that I've been working with, Val, like, it just makes my heart full of joy, you know, and they all, like, kind of refer each other to me.
That's amazing. Nice,
you know, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God, I love you guys.
Well, I think that's, in a way, that just shows growth from the international community, right? So there's this idea of tragedy of the commons, that an individual or select few will ruin it for the majority, right?
Yeah.
And I think everyone can sort of relate to that. And I think in some ways, I think as an international community, we do carry shame because we assumed, well, not we, there were select individuals who took up hatred and really identified with Islamophobia, blaming an entire religion that accounts for 1 billion plus of the world to be hateful and to be cruel and everything negative in a way, when it really wasn't that way. They, like everyone else who was Christian, Jewish, anything, wanted to have a better life, to create a better opportunity for both in their country and abroad. Because, I mean, you've worked in Afghanistan. It is one of the most beautiful countries on earth.
Oh,
it has
gosh,
these luscious mountains and if you think of all of the history that has been ruined because of what's been happening locally,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think that people who want a prosperous Afghanistan, people living there, would have ever wanted what is happening now. I just can't see it in my heart that is the life that they had pictured, and coming from something that has always been one of the most beautiful places on earth, it just doesn't make sense. And for people to just think that was the ambition, I think it's just short-sightedness that now is probably, as we were talking about before, carrying a lot of shame from that. And thankfully, I feel that some people are finally growing and coming out of that and seeing somewhat of a light in a way. So I think it's great to hear that. And I hope that as an international community, we can stand behind it more and push people to seek out resources, and that more people will speak up when instances of discrimination happen, so that they feel that if they want to wear a religious piece or anything like that, practice their religion, that they are supported by people in the religion or outside of it, because that is what's needed to carry on to, you know, the next phase of the world, especially in such a trying time. I mean, we've had the pandemic, the world has sort of shut down, and hopefully when we start reopening all over the world, it comes in a kinder, more embracing self.
Absolutely. I mean, there's this beautiful saying in my religion that, you know, if you're not my brother in my faith, then you're my brother in humanity, right? And it doesn't matter who you are. We're interconnected. And that to me is the most beautiful thing that anybody could say. Like, I don't care where you're from. As humans,
for me, I think what would be great is that for all of the things that you've been working on now, what is your next ambition?
So my goal is to do more workshops. It's to, like, I love holding workshops on, like, inner child wounds, like mental health, emotional resilience, shame resilience, things like that. I love to move towards more coaching. I'm in my own private practice. I did quit my 9-to-5, which I'm really grateful for. I had that opportunity this summer to do that. So I plan on growing and thriving in that sense. So yeah, and then hopefully getting my book completely published and, you know, doing a mini tour and being busy with that.
Great. I mean, amazing. So awesome to hear. I hope that all goes well. If people want to find your book, do you know where potentially that could be?
It will probably be on Amazon. Great. So the title will be like The Sun Still Rises, but I'll let you know all the details once I know everything.
Fantastic. I'll put it on social media. So if everyone wants to go and support you, buy it and share it, that would be amazing. And now to just round off, we always want to do now, and to just sort of round everything off, we have sort of the conclusion segments and sort of quick fire questions, which is a new part of the show that I'm going to start from now on. And I have some quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. So you mentioned earlier that you know, you really enjoy poetry. If you had to recommend one poetry, what would it be? What's the favorite?
I really love Rumi.
Oh, great. Favorite dream country to visit?
That's so hard. Spain.
Spain. I mean, do you know where in Spain yet, or just Spain in general? Just Spain in general. Something you're really, really proud of?
My TED Talk. I don't talk about it enough, but I'm really proud of it.
Nice. Everyone, go watch it. Go listen to it. Support her. Thank you. And her TED Talk. And then I think something that maybe you at the time deemed a failure, but actually turned into a life lesson or a blessing, anything like that?
Oh, yes. I was freshman in, in college. And my organic chemistry teacher told me I would never get into med school. And I was really dumb. and I believed her, and I thought I was a failure. And then I decided to try my hand at psychology, and that was a complete different trajectory of my life. And I'm really proud that I was able to choose that path, even though it was forced upon me. It was definitely a blessing in a disguise.
Great. And then one of the final ones is something you have always been terrified of, but always wanted to try. Anything on the sort of list?
Yes. So there's a bunch of them, but I'm terrified of heights, but I want to go on a hot air balloon ride.
You definitely, I've done it.
It's
absolutely incredible. I'm also terrified of heights. So I went to, my boyfriend's parents lived in Dubai, and we went to, they have like Sky Balloon or Air Balloon Dubai. And I watched a video with my boyfriend like early October. We went in November, and then in September, October, we watched this video, and I said to my boyfriend, how cool would it be if you went in an air balloon? And he called his dad, and his dad was like, okay, we're going to go. And he booked it the day before my birthday.
Oh, wow.
And I was so scared. I was like, yeah, I have no choice now. His parents have booked it. I can't back out now. And the morning of, I remember waking up and being like, I am so scared. Why on earth did I ever do this? And then I got in, and I sort of, there's like, because you're basically in a basket. You're in a basket with a like bag that floats almost.
Yeah.
And I'm holding onto the middle because they have these like sort of pillars in the middle that you can hold onto. And I remember going up and being so scared. And at one point, my body just let go of all fear. And what you felt, because it's completely silent, it's the most still feeling, and you're above the desert, and it's absolutely freeing. I can only describe it as just freeing, and like, I don't know, it was one of the most incredible feelings. Yeah, I really recommend it. I really, really do. And I've been told the same about skydiving, but that is just something I don't want to get into. No.
Yeah, that's my second one.
Yeah. So it's skydiving, air balloon, anything else?
Skydiving, hot air balloon.
Yeah,
those are the two that are coming to my mind right now.
Perfect. Any questions you want to ask me? Otherwise, I think I'll end the show there.
No, I think I'm really good. It was just, thank you for hosting and just talking.
Of course.
A really great time talking today.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. I think a lot of people will find this helpful. And of course, I'd love to leave it over to you. How can people support you? How can people get help from you? And where should they find you?
I can probably send you my link tree, but there's a website that you can go to, which is www.noorpinnacoaching.com. My Instagram handle is noor-pinna. You can find me there. My TikTok is imperfectly acceptable. So I do a lot of like quick videos of mental health and tips like that. So, and if you're a woman and want to join my Facebook group, it's called The Resilient Mindset. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. So everyone, please go and support. And if you want to join or find resources, they are always available to you. I will also link them in this episode. But thank you so much, everyone, for listening to the Everything With Val podcast. Please, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. I'm back for season two. Hopefully a lot more exciting episodes that you will enjoy. Like, for example, I have book episodes coming out. For example, Circe, we just read, and a lot more to come. Thank you so, so much to Noor for joining me on this episode. I hope you're all staying safe and well. And until next time, have a great week. Bye-bye.